Hello, and welcome to That's Theatre Darling, a podcast that shouts from the rooftops about the skill, creativity, and passion of all of the people who make theatre happen. My name is Amy, and I am thrilled to have you here. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Today, I am speaking to a wonderfully passionate and optimistic person who has the incredible ability to bring a smile to anyone's face and put everyone that she meets at ease. She is an absolute delight. It is the marvellous Lizzie Rodipe. Hello.
Oh my God, why would you start with saying something like that?
Too nice.
The floodgates have opened.
Shall I do the horrible version? I've got that one too.
She usually forgets props. She's usually caught running around after herself.
Neither of those are true.
Where is the iPad?
That is true. I'd forgotten about that. Lizzie, what a treat to have you here on my podcast. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm so good. All the better for seeing your beautiful self.
Oh, you too. You too. So we worked together at the Globe Theatre on a show called As You Like It, which was just a joy of a job, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So brilliant. I mean, unfortunately, I didn't see it through to the end because I moved on to another job, but I left you in the very capable hands of Aislinn, the lovely Aislinn.
The most incredible human being.
I know, right? Ever. See, I left you in good hands.
You did.
It was all fine.
You did.
But I seem to remember we spent most of the job trying to work out where we knew each other from. I don't know whether we ever actually worked it out, did we?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. And to this day, I don't know where we know each other from.
No. We turned up on the first day, didn't we, in the meet and greet, and we'd met each other and we were like, I know you, but I don't know where from.
And then spent a month and a half in the summer like, is
where
it from?
Where is it?
No.
Yeah.
Here? No.
Do you know this person?
No.
So if there's any mutual friends out there that know where we know each other from, please let us know because we just don't know.
Call in immediately because we've spent a year not knowing.
Not knowing where we know each other from. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but I would love to, I'd just be so intrigued to know.
Yes.
But yeah, that was just, yeah, brilliant, brilliant job to, not meet you on because we met each other before somehow, but
just
to spend time with you. And
it?
Yeah, the cast was so lovely.
Oh.
And Liz.
Liz?
Oh.
It's Elizabeth, my favourite other Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Dead Shepherds.
The Dead Shepherds, yep, our tribute band.
I found a picture the other day and I wet myself.
So we should say this is the press night card that we decided to do for everyone. We decided that we were going to form a band called Dead Shepherd. And we dressed up in a load of different costumes that we found and we made a backdrop. We got really into it. Do you know what the worst thing about this is? I've just realised in this moment that that is not my first rodeo when it comes to dressing up and doing a press night card. Because on the podcast, Rachel Middlemore and I have spoken about the fact that we've done it before.
So
maybe
the
I'm the catalyst in this. Yes.
One day on a show when, you know, the costume's like, so where's this costume? We know Amy's taking it for a photo somewhere.
I absolutely always dress up whenever I can. I always make sure I ask, but I have to. I just love costumes.
Oh my
I love
God,
them.
Yeah.
I hate wearing a costume on stage.
I
hate it.
I love it.
But dressing up backstage, brilliant.
Costumes on stage. If a designer's like, can an ASM? I'm like, hi, yeah. What are you saying? I love it. As I was in
love
costume
that.
At
Ready.
The Globe.
runs from the other end of the theatre. Sorry, did you say something?
Because you know there was that stage where you used to be paid for it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then everyone stopped being paid and like loads of people like, God, this is awful. And I was like, couldn't care less. I just want to be dressed.
I just love it. Don't make me wear my own clothes. I won't do it.
No. Have you got tights? Absolutely. And what were those jodhpurs or those awful trousers like wore in the Globe? I'll have them.
Oh my
Thank
God.
You.
Yeah. Brilliant. I love it. So I would love to kick off by asking you to cast your memory back to your very first memory of being in a theatre. What do you remember about it?
Oh my God, it's such a funny memory. So my mum's friends were bus drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And where we are in London, the bus driving like association used to take all the bus driver kids to a panto every year. And
oh, wow.
I've been obsessed with theatre since I was like five, obviously being slightly hyperactive does that to a child. And my mum's friend took me, my brother, my sister, along with her two kids to the panto.
Mm.
And it was like a whole world of magic because we got the wands and the tiaras, oh, yeah. You know, like before, so you feel really like sparkling.
Mm.
And then I think it was at Richmond, and it was the, you know, the typical, like, you know, you sat down, the lights went down, the curtains open, and the set was there, and I literally was like enthralled.
Mm.
I as a child, it was one of those moments where you just think, this is everything. And it was just like, it was the part, this is why I think pantos and getting children's theatre is so important, because it was just this moment of like, this is everything. And you can interact and they know you, obviously. Yeah. You know, as a child, you think them talking to you is like, they know me.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
fairy, they're speaking, she understands to me. Me. Yeah. And she is a fairy. It was just, and we did that for years. And it literally just made my life.
Yeah.
I was hooked.
And so did you always want to work in theatre? Or did you want to be something different, yes, when you were a child?
No, I always wanted to work in theatre. I mean, granted, I thought I'd be on stage.
Mm-hmm. I think we all did that. I think because that's the first thing you're exposed to.
That's like the only thing. I just thought, I'm going to be in theatre. Then obviously the natural progression would be to move to Hollywood.
Of course, yeah. Naturally.
Obviously. Marry Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because I loved Castaway, so.
I think I still have that aspiration.
God, yes.
Love that man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just was like, that's me. That's my whole life set. And I was quite like a determined child. So I literally said to my mum, that's what I'm doing. And she was a bit like, okay. All right then. And I just ran with it.
That's brilliant. So I'd love to know, like, what your kind of journey was into theatre then. Like, where did you start and kind of how did you get to where you are now? Like, what was the progression?
I was really lucky and really blessed because I was surrounded by such incredible people. So I said I wanted to be in theatre and I, you know, went through school. And in my secondary school, we were a girls' school and we were partnered with a boys' school.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we put on shows, like every school did, but the boys' school, their drama teacher, she used to be a stage manager.
Oh, nice.
In the West End. So when they put on shows, it was like, I mean, she was a drill sergeant. It was West End shows in a secondary school. And the girls were always auditioned from our school and we went over to the boys' school. And I just remember I auditioned one year and I was a wreck. I barely knew my lines. It was awful. And this lady just went, right, get out of the room, go sit somewhere quiet, take a deep breath, read through your lines and come back in. I was like, because she was like West End stage manager.
Yeah.
Just get on with it. So I literally left, did everything she said, came back in, read my lines. She's like, marvellous. See you Monday. I was like, oh my God, okay. Wow. And that kind of started it off. So I did their school plays from year 8 to year 10.
Mm-hmm.
And she coached me. She worked with me. She was the most incredible lady, Miss Davis Jones. And then it came to sixth form and I left my school to go do drama at the boys' school because she was just everything. And I did drama. And then she knew a lady called Vanessa who had started off the National Youth Theatre stage management. So Rian, Miss Davis Jones, said, Lizzie, go and audition for National Youth Theatre. And obviously then I was like, I only want to act. So I auditioned for the acting side and I got in at 16 and I was like, yes! One more step to marrying Tom Hanks. Here we go. And I did the summer course, which was just, for anyone who's done National Youth Theatre summer course, it's the most incredible experience, you know.
Mm.
There's like hundreds of like 16 to 18 year olds running around. It's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Did that. And then obviously I was like, okay, I'm going to go to drama school.
Mm-hmm.
By then I probably should have guessed that maybe acting wasn't for me. But it was still the only side of theatre that I could wrap my head around.
Yeah.
So I did the whole drama school auditions. Obviously, didn't get into any because I'm not an actor. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, I really don't like people looking at me and I really don't like criticism.
That's quite a big, like, you know, flag, I think.
And just like, honestly.
Don't look at me. Sorry, don't look at me.
Don't give credit for actors because people are staring at you and they're judging. And I can't cope with that. So I don't know why I thought I was ever going to be an actor because when someone's like, oh, I'm not really a fan of that, I was like, oh my God, my whole soul was wrecked. Christ. So I went to Greenwich to study drama and Greenwich have a great structure where in your first year you backstage the third year show. And I don't know what my drama teacher saw in me, but he was like, you should DSM this show. You should definitely DSM it. And I was a bit like, no, it's not for me. I'm still set on being an actor. And I was like, fine, you know, like a really pompous one. I was like, fine, give it to me.
I'll do it for you, but not for me.
Literally. And it was like that moment again at a panto where I sat down and I had my script in front of me, had all my stationery, and we'd had our little like cute meet and greet. And I just was like, oh my God, this is everything. Like sat here on my desk with the script, prompting, jotting down notes, you know, having all those conversations, being the person in that room who's the linchpin. I was just like, this is me. Like I was at home and we went to Greenwich Theatre and obviously I called the show from the box. And literally I finished that and I think, God, that was in that whole process was like obviously in like January time. By then I'd put my application through to NYT again because I was like, I need to be on the backstage course actually. I need to be on the stage management course immediately. And being the ASM that I am, I made a portfolio for them. I came to my like interview with this massive portfolio. I was like, and these are my shows and these are my ideas and this is how I run. And I was just like, who am I? Christ. I got in. I got in and obviously we get assigned like different teachers. And mine was a guy called Gareth Hewlands, who is a phenomenal show caller. He's done like everything in the West End. And he now does like massive arena shows in like the Middle East, like, you know, like giant. And he again just instilled so much passion and drive in me. And then Vanessa, the queen, she used to have these etiquette talks. So everyone who passed through the National Youth Theatre Stage Management course, I don't know if she did it for the other course, but definitely she had an etiquette course. And she taught you all about the etiquette of being a stage manager.
Oh, wow.
Which is just phenomenal. So it's things like, you know, you don't say no.
Yeah.
You always work around it. When you come into a new theatre, you go and see everybody. You introduce yourself, you say hello, you present yourself. Just so many different things that she taught you that you just thought, these are life skills.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're things that I'm going to need. So then when I finished and I graduated university and I was like, I've got to be a stage manager. I literally took the life skills that she gave me and we were up in Manchester because National Youth Theatre have an incredible thing where they then do rap.
Yeah.
And they take you out on different shows so you can use all of those skills. And I used them like we did rep in the West End and I did a Vanessa. I went in and I said, hello, this is who I am. And I honest to God, I paraded myself around every department in every theatre, in every building. And it's something that's like steered me well in my career because people know Lizzie comes into your theatre and she says hello and she goes to like, I mean, marketing. They don't really need to know who I am. But I'm there tapping on the door like, hi, you don't know me. I don't know you. I'm busy. Sometimes, you know, doesn't really matter what they're doing in the day. I am there tapping on the door.
But that's so lovely, though, because that's just, you know, you're then a friendly face and you're then, you know, if they do need anything, you're then there and you're, you know, you're able to help. And actually they go, oh, I could speak to Lizzie about that. She came and introduced herself. You know, it's so important.
And that's exactly why Vanessa did it. So it's one of those skills that I've kept with me. It's one of those things where I just think my journey into stage management has been really easy because I've been able to learn from just such incredible people and just kept these little nuggets of information. So yeah, I just I had the generic marry Tom Hanks and then become a stage manager.
You know, those classic hand in hand things.
Obviously. Who doesn't?
So ignoring the COVID hell for now, let's call it that, COVID hell. What is your job title now and how would you describe your job to somebody who doesn't work in theatre?
Oh, God. So I am an assistant stage manager and I would describe an assistant stage manager as being, this is a bit big-headed, but everything. We are the secret ninjas.
Yeah.
We are quiet. We get things sorted backstage, behind the scenes, whether it's a prop issue, whether, and I've had it on shows where a bit of the model box has gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got to find that chair, Lizzie?
Yeah.
So we look after everything. We are the quiet ninjas, making sure that everything runs smoothly, making sure that you don't see the hiccups, the creases, mm-hmm. the issues. That's how I describe an ASM. We are just quiet ninjas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely agree with that.
And we wear black.
Yeah, exactly. Ninjas.
Done.
unless you're in costume, which is much harder to be a ninja backstage when you're in the costume.
Yes, that is.
I've definitely done shows where I've been wearing a costume and I've had to like take a bit of it off to be a ninja, like put a black top on to be a ninja and then put my costume back on quickly. It's just hard.
Yes.
It's hard when you've got big old like puffy sleeves and stuff when you're trying to run around backstage.
Like, can you grab this? Sure thing. No. While I run really quietly in my heels.
Yeah. Oh my god! I did a show with Anthony Papamichael in the SWP called Lions and Tigers, and he was given honestly the squeakiest boots I've ever come across in my entire life, and it was just like he was trying so hard to be quiet, but he was literally like. And we had to, I think it was Kira, the stage manager, that had to be like, I'm really sorry, guys, but you've got to give him some other boots. Like, we can't, like, we absolutely cannot be quiet with him squeaking in the background. So ridiculous.
Oh, I love that.
I think designers sometimes forget that, like, as well as looking great, we need to be able to do stuff.
Absolutely.
Ridiculous. And so what would you say is your favourite part of the job?
Mine's a bit, I don't know if philosophical is the word, but so you know that moment, and this is kind of a stage manager-y
mm-hmm.
understanding, where you're in rehearsals,
mm-hmm.
and it's just before the show, and it's that moment when the actors and the director really realise that they can lean on stage management, mm-hmm. like that we've actually got their back no matter what happens.
Yeah.
And no matter the show I've done, there's always just this moment of clarity where it's like, oh, they're ours. Like, they're here for us. And that's my most favourite part of the job, because it's just, they just start asking you for the wildest of things. But they're always super fun and super weird. And they allow those lovely moments, like, you know, like you're kind of banging on someone's door like, hi, can you get out of your dressing room and come downstairs really quickly? And they're just like, Lizzie, come and look at this card my grandson wrote me. And you're like, oh my God, show
me. You're late, but fine, okay.
Let me have a little sneaky. And that's what I love. That's my most favourite part of the job.
Yeah, because there has to be that trust, doesn't there?
Yeah.
You have to build that trust. And actually you're right, there is just a moment, isn't there, where the trust kind of clicks into place. It's like sort of Lego. It kind of clicks and it's like, oh, okay, right, now we're in it together. Cool.
And it's a thing that happens for all stage management.
In different
periods, but I just feel there's a moment where just everyone gels and you work as a team. And that's, I usually find, the moment when the show suddenly elevates.
Definitely.
And it's like, yes, you trust your stage manager, you trust your DSM, you trust your ASM, and we trust you.
Yeah.
I just, I adore it.
Yeah, because it must be hard. Like, because I guess for a director, like, sometimes they choose their stage management team,
yeah.
but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they've just got a stage management team thrust upon them, and actually they've chosen their creative team. They've chosen their actors. They've chosen their singers and dancers and whoever.
Yeah.
But they haven't, sometimes they haven't chosen you, and so you have to, like, build that relationship from scratch very quickly. Like,
absolutely.
Really quickly.
Absolutely. And it's the same with the actors.
And with the actors as well. They, you know, they don't know you from Adam. So they don't know what they can ask of you, or like whether they can trust you, or, you know.
And the trust they have to put in us, because something as stupid as, I have your props.
Yeah.
If I don't have your prop, your lawn is going to look like a lemon on stage. And it must be so hard to just think, I trust you to make sure that my job runs smoothly and I'm able to do my job.
Yeah.
That's something that just amazes me.
Yeah, definitely. Flipping it,
Ooh.
What, in your opinion, is the worst part of your job? I can feel a truth bomb coming.
Can I have two?
Yeah,
is that all
sure.
to say? What's the worst
no,
part?
Do it.
I've got two reasons why.
Go for it. Lay it on
so
me.
So my first one is a big one, and I'm sure it's mm-hmm. one that everybody in theatre gets. Work-life balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is, I think, the worst part of our job, because I find of all the industries, it seems like people in theatre don't need a work-life balance, because I guess
yeah.
we are a public-serving role. So as long as people in the public have their lives and they're able to come and enjoy, our lives are put on hold.
Yeah.
But then also as stage management, like 3 hours before a show, we come in. And that's mm-hmm. not even before the show. That's before the actors come in.
The
at
actors
like
come
five.
In. Yeah.
So we're in yeah. at two.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh my God, I'm in work from two till like 11 sometimes. And heaven mm-hmm. forbid, I know loads of people have said it on the podcast, but heaven forbid you have a matinee.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like
the whole day's gone.
Finished.
Day and like, night.
So, yeah. So sometimes that work-life balance is like, oh,
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
is not great.
Nope.
And then controversial truth bomb coming from Lizzie. Untrusting actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is
I'm with you.
The worst part. I don't know if untrusting is a word.
I'll go with that. I know what you mean.
Yeah. That's the worst part of the job, because I've had it where you're backstage and someone, obviously, you know, just the, you know what it's like sometimes when you're stressed and you can't see.
Yeah.
And someone's like, I can't see my prop. And you're mm-hmm. trying to calm them down. And just suddenly a tirade comes your way. And you're just like, first of all, I need you to trust me because I have your back. Second of all, I don't necessarily come to work to be screamed at.
Yeah.
So... And you yeah. know, I don't scream at you when you drop a line.
Yeah, exactly.
Can
yeah.
you imagine? Shows in progress, actor drops a line. You messed up! From the wings.
I can't believe it. You've messed up our show.
DSM, I'm going to have to flick two lines now.
Yeah. You know? I missed a lighting cue because of you.
Can you jump to Q6? She skipped. Like, those things don't happen. So sometimes when an actor does that to someone backstage, and I mean, it's happened to everyone, and it's happened to, you know, the poor sound number two or three who's fitting the mics.
Yeah.
And those are the aspects of the job I don't like, because we don't come to work to be screamed at. Like, theatre is such a
Nobody
joyous
does.
Job.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful job. So when that happens sometimes, it's like quite jarring.
Yeah, like, why do you have to ruin it?
Yeah.
What's the point?
Usually it's before a show or in the middle of a show, because you're like, now you've kind of ruined these 2.5 hours for me.
Yeah. And like the thing that I do get about it, like being devil's advocate, I get that it's stressful.
Absolutely.
Like I get that you're bearing your soul. I get that you feel vulnerable.
Yeah.
Get it. Get it. Completely get it. We all get it. We understand that's the only way that you can get to that place, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of actors can do that without shouting.
Yes. Exactly.
And that makes me think, well, it is possible.
Yeah. And also sometimes it's like, maybe this wing right beside the stage, it's not the best place to shout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
maybe.
A thought.
You know.
Just put a little tidbit out there for you. Yeah. So after I've thrown that little cheeky one in, that's the tip.
Yeah, got it. Love it.
All the Instagrams come in now on Twitter. We hate Lizzie.
Sorry, I'll turn comments off. It's fine.
Thank you.
Got you back. So I would love to move on now to the quickfire question section. These are questions that are coming at you in the moment. You haven't heard them before. So if you're ready, you look very excited. So I think you're ready.
I love it. Let's do it. I feel like a politician.
Okay. No, don't be a politician, because you'll just avoid all the answers. You need to be the opposite of a politician.
No comment.
Anyway, getting sidetracked about politicians. Okay. First question. What is the most embarrassing moment that you've had while working in theatre?
Oh God. Okay. So I worked at the Royal Exchange on the first all black production of Guys and Dolls, which was phenomenal. And we had sandwiches that used to come in on like a little like tea trolley. And obviously I prepped the sandwiches hours before. So I wrap them in cling film, pop them in the fridge, blah, blah, blah. Take them out of the fridge, pop them on my tray, pop it by the door. Actor wheels it on stage, you know, seamless and beautiful. Obviously, you have to take the cling film off the sandwiches. And one day, I didn't. And out comes Trevor, the actor, grabs the trolley, wheels it on stage, you know, with all the trust in his ASM.
Oh, the irony, the irony. Hey, people make mistakes.
Wheels this thing on stage and bless him, without even taking a beat, just unwrapped the sandwiches from the cling film.
Oh, and they all
munched away. And then afterwards, obviously, oh my God, obviously it was put in the show report.
Oh no.
But Guys and Dolls, all the characters have got little nicknames. And
oh, no.
When we were on the show, we were all given like funny, adorable nicknames. And so I was given a nickname, Cling Film Lizzie. And if anyone's ever worked at the Royal Exchange, like, they usually hire the same stage management back. It's quite a tight-knit group.
Oh my God, don't tell me that's still your nickname.
That is still my nickname to today, Cling Film. And sometimes it's just shortened to just Cling Film.
Cling Film. Oh no, that's so sad. It's gonna haunt you forever.
Honest to God. Honest to God.
Bless you. Brilliant. Brilliant.
That's me.
Love it.
The irony and
Cling Film Lizzie. Oh, brilliant. Okay, what would you say is your work superpower?
My iPad. My work superpower is my iPad.
Interesting, because I was thinking of that as a question of like, what is your like personality trait or whatever, but you've gone straight in with the iPad.
If it's my personal work superpower, I think...
I mean, you can go with your iPad if you want.
Let's not, because, you know, the iPad has had problems. My personal one is, you know, flawless. I think that is my warmth.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm quite warm. So when we are backstage and when, you know, the actors are feeling vulnerable, I feel like they feel like they're able to just come and chat.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, they're off stage and they've got a scene coming on and they just need to just chat. And I think they just like the fact that I love to chat.
Yeah.
So we'll just have a little chat like in between scenes. So I think, that's my work. That's my work superpower.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that.
Thank you.
What is the biggest misconception about your job?
What is the biggest misconception about the job? I think the biggest misconception, controversial coming, is that we can do everything.
Yeah.
I think people sometimes, like especially when you get a job role and it's ASM wardrobe. Wardrobe and lighting and sound operator. It's like, no, though ASMs, like, we do solve a lot of problems and we tend to, like, I know from my experience, I tend to work with every single person in the creative team. And I help them solve problems just because I'm in the room and I know what's going on and I know that, okay, well, costume, this is what the costume looks like, so that mic is going to have to go over here. But we also need our team around us.
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest misconception, is that somehow, like, stage manager or ASMs can do it alone. We're very much team players and we need everyone because we love everyone.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, you wouldn't, I feel like in any other industry, like, I mean, obviously there are industries that you do have this, but you wouldn't just be like, oh, you're a, you know, financial advisor / banker / I don't know, estate agent. What? And like, I know that there are, there will be jobs out there that do have those slashes, but like, come on, like, there's a reason why there are separate roles.
Yeah.
So, you know, honor that reason.
Exactly. And value those people.
It's because people need to be able, yeah, people need to be able to do their own job, and it works better when there are enough people to do the work.
Absolutely. And sometimes, this ASM is not a great wardrobe. Sometimes I really need a wardrobe mistress. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I can stitch on that button. But like, can we just, no!
No.
I'm not a seamstress.
No.
Sorry.
Please don't make me be one. Yeah. You want your show looking perfect? Don't make me do this.
I can only take out so many creases. Sorry.
Yeah. Agreed. So I love a showstop story, and I was wondering if you had any showstop stories that you could tell me about that you've been a part of.
I don't know if I've ever had a showstop.
Really?
I can't remember having one.
Well, then maybe you haven't had one. I mean, it's not. That's, or maybe not, I've like, just blocked it out unusual. Of
my mind. I mean,
maybe.
Maybe they've been that dramatic that I've just been like, I can't ever remember that situation. But yeah, I maybe. Do have a funny being on the side of the audience showstop story.
Yeah, go for it.
Which is quite hysterical. So me and one of my good friends, Nika, went to watch Tina.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had like a few people in the cast who I just loved and adored. And I was like, oh, I'm going to support you. And they're blessing. They had such a good run. And the show we watched, everything was going beautifully. And the drum kit rolls down the rake.
What?
You know this is coming, Amy. The drum kit, I don't know what happened. Like maybe the brakes weren't put on the truck or something. And I believe was the actor on it? I think the actor Muso was on the drums. Anyway, drum kit just starts rolling down, bam, into the auditorium, which was like, and obviously I'm sitting there as an ASM, and my good friend beside me, Danika, is an actor.
Yeah.
And we're just sat there like, oh my God, oh my, like our hearts are palpitating. And some of the audience don't really know what's going on, but we're dying inside. Obviously, bless them, out comes stage management and out comes the crew to hoist this drum kit back onto stage. But while this is happening,
Jesus.
The poor actors who are playing the I-Kets shimmy on stage, all stylish like, see that this is happening and in the most beautiful fashion, just shimmy back off stage. Like, completely in character. Do a little shimmy back off stage.
Shimmy, 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 shimmy.
And it was just so funny. And obviously, I'm a bit gobby, as you can tell by the length of this podcast. Sorry, everyone listening. And like loads of people just started taking pictures and filming this. And I was like, stop filming this immediately. Honestly, and the poor ushers were looking at me like, who is she?
Who's this?
So I was like, stop filming. This is not great for anyone. Stop filming the stage management. So that's my little showstop story. Getting involved.
I love that. So protective. Protective to the core.
I mean, stop filming the ASM. They're trying their best.
I mean, was anybody hurt? Like, was everyone okay?
No, I think everyone was fine. And obviously got like a massive round of applause.
Yeah.
And we just restarted everything so beautifully.
Shimmy, 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 start again.
It was just that moment in slow-mo watching the drum kit roll down the rake.
Oh
thinking,
my God.
Is that stopping? Also, is the drum kit meant to roll down the stage?
Seems like an odd choice.
It could be one of those things where, you know, it rolls down and it's meant to get onto the apron and stops, but it passed the apron and fell.
Oh my God. That's terrifying. Imagine being on the front row, like, ah!
Honestly, all I could think of was, imagine being backstage, like, everyone being like, what is going on? Because it's one of those moments where backstage, how can you stop the drum kit rolling down the stage? I mean, you've just got to wait for it to land.
Yeah, you can't run on and stop it. Like, it's going to be heavy.
Yeah, you've just got to wait for it to...
Oh, God.
...fulfill its duty and land into the auditorium.
I'd love to have read that show report.
Oh God, me too. I really wanted it. I even thought to ask one of the actors, like, do you mind just, you don't get them, but can you find somebody who does? So that's my hijacking showstop story.
Excellent. Love it. Okay, so I've left this question sort of deliberately vague, but what show would you say has had the biggest effect on you?
I think actually the show, weirdly enough, that had the biggest effect on me was the Welkin at the National, my last show before the horror.
Yeah.
But it just, like, one, if you've ever worked at the National, it's just, it's, so I've been really lucky. I've worked at, like, you know, theatres gradiating upwards.
Mm.
And nothing prepares you for the National. It is just theatre on steroids. And it takes the best of every single theatre in one place, like the best of stage management, the best of the crew, the best of builders. Just, it's it's phenomenal. But working there, I've got to work with, and I've worked with some beautiful actors, but I just got to work with such a plethora of actors, and it helped me mature, it helped me grow. And what was annoying was it helped me refine my practice. And I was really excited to take what I'd learned onwards.
Aww. Yeah.
Because so many people pass through that building.
Mm.
And so many people have so many different skills and stories that you just pick it up.
Yeah, so there's so many people to learn from, yeah.
So, and just even just something small, like just down to like the kitchen staff, because they've got like a fully functioning canteen green room. Just down to them, like listening to them, listening to their stories, you just think, I've so much to learn.
Mm,
I've picked up so much that I just want to take this and go, oh, guys, like, I want to go back to the Globe and be like, guys, I bought a power bank so my laptop, I mean, my iPad won't die.
Look at how much I've learned.
just even like real things, like working in such a massive props department with so many different people. I learned so much about how to approach props departments. And how to make their lives easier as an ASM. So that was, that's my little growth, the National. Thank you.
Oh, oh, that's so lovely. Love letter to the National. Okay, what is the strangest request that you've ever received on rehearsal notes?
I don't know if I can say it.
Well, now I want to know it. I really want to know it now. I mean, I can cut this out if you want, but I really want to know
I won't name anything, but it was a show, and it was set in 1994, I want to say, which came with a whole bunch of funniness because I was born in 95, so half the props I was like, what is this? Like, it's too recent in recent memory for prop searching, like, in depth.
Yeah.
But I have absolutely no recollection.
Yeah.
Of, you know, like, what was it? What's the chocolate bar? What was Snickers? Marathon?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what is a marathon bar? But this thing had a smutty magazine on the desk. And it was researching a 1994... smutty magazine, because it was like it was mentioned. And so it was like, ooh. all the research, and obviously going on to, like, you know, the work computers putting on incognito mode, obviously.
And people coming in and being like, Lizzie, you're not supposed to be working.
Honest to God. And my desk was by the door, so like if you came through the door you could see my computer. And I had to go to a, oh God, I'm not going to say what the story is because it tells you the theatre, but I had to go to a sex shop, but not like Anne Summers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a vintage sex shop. And it was just, I walked in, they looked at me, I looked at them. They were thinking, what the hell is she doing in here? I was thinking, this.
What the hell am I doing in here?
And also I remember telling the lady in props, and she was like, Lizzie, why? I just like to go above and beyond. You know? Like, it was just so
going
wild.
For authenticity.
Yeah, and I ran with it. I was like, "This is weird and inappropriate." I'm having quite a good time. You know, it's like your lube story. You know, just putting the lube on the counter and just looking them in the eye, like, yeah,
yeah.
I'm getting 15 liters, and what?
For anybody who's listening to this and doesn't know the lube story is in a previous podcast, by the way.
Sorry, yeah.
And it is lube for a prop, not for me.
Same with my magazine. It's a prop. Yeah.
I actually had to make a porn magazine, like a 1930s or 1940s Ooh. Or something. I had to make it. I was at university and we were doing City of Angels. And I will always remember it because I was actually off sick. I was, I think I had like the flu or something. I was really, really unwell. But I was like trying, you know, when you're younger and like you just want to, like,
yeah.
You just work. True. Like even if you're like literally on death's door, you're like, just, I've got to do something. So I was like sitting in my bed, like with the flu, making a 1930s, 1940s porn magazine while I was off sick. So random.
But it was quite
fun.
Them.
I quite like making a magazine. It's quite
that's
fun.
That's the thing. Like,
I mean, the naked ladies aside, you know.
But even that sometimes you are like, you look great.
Yeah. Good on you.
Yeah. Right on, sister. Next page. It's just silly, isn't it?
Yeah. Very, very silly. That is the exact right way to describe it. And that, my friend, is the end of quickfire questions.
With Lizzie, the longest quickfire questions ever.
No, I think it's been longer. So I'd love to talk to you now about theatre in a more kind of general sense. So I was wondering if you could tell me what you think are the benefits of working in a creative industry.
I think the benefits are the people. Mm. Oh my God, the people you meet, the stories you hear, the life experience is just like, honestly, the things that I've been able to rub off my tiny little shoulders from working with absolute giants has been incredible. Mm. Like, I worked with June Watson, who is, I mean, if it was normal to eat somebody, I would have eaten June. She's just delicious.
I really wasn't expecting you to say that.
But she's just delicious. She's just like, oh, you just can't get enough. But just, like, I remember sitting in our office and she's been married to her husband for, like, a gazillion years. Mm. And we were all just sat and we were like, June, how do you do it? Like, one, in our job is hard enough. And you've had an incredible career in our job and you've been married to this man for years. And, like, when you sit down and June Watson gives you relationship advice, we were all like on our knees in a semicircle while June was on the sofa.
Feed us. Feed us information.
And that's just like, that's the best thing about it. I think you just meet so many people. You just hear things and you're like, the world needs to know this.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Flipping it a little bit, what is your biggest frustration with the theatre, with theatre in general?
I think one of my biggest frustrations with theatre sometimes is underappreciating the skills that they have.
Mm.
Like, as an industry, there are phenomenally skilled people. Like, it's insane. Mm. From actor, director, casting director, just everyone is so skilled and at the top of their game.
Mm.
It doesn't matter, like, how small the theatre is. You are at the top of your game in your skill. And I think sometimes, not necessarily theatre, but maybe sometimes they're like moneymakers.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like they just don't understand the talent and the skill that they have at their disposal because they're surrounded by it. Like, every single team is full of talented people. So when you're surrounded by that, you forget.
Yeah.
That this person has honed that skill.
And I think also it's easy to forget, like, the heart as well. I think the heart of the people that are like, you know, because it's, yeah, they're so skilled and they're so talented, but they also put their heart and soul into everything.
Yeah,
I think
and that's their such passion a, like, and their life, ultimately, because we spend so long in a theatre that you give so much. And sometimes I think they forget that we love our job and we're here because we love it.
Yeah, yeah.
That can be annoying because I've seen some incredible people just burn out because of the lack of appreciation. You're just like, oh.
What a waste,
Yeah. Like, what a waste.
Agree. This is an optional question. If it's too hard to answer, you don't have to answer it.
Ooh.
how has it been for you not being able to work in theatre, and what do you miss the most?
Ah, this is when I cry.
You don't have to answer.
I mean, oh God, sorry everyone. Christ, here she comes. Like, so the first lockdown, like, truly broke my heart. Just because, like, okay, so I'm really silly. I have a lot of, like, I plan a lot of things. And when I first started out my career, I saw some stage managers and they'd be like, oh my God, I am booked till, like, you know, 2022. And I was like, how do you get there? I'm just booking the next job. Like, how do you become the type of person who books months in advance? I remember someone like telling me, you know, you just got hard work, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, yeah, great. And I'd spent years doing that. And I was finally at that point in my career where I was booking jobs, you know. 2021 was sorted. And I was like, yes, I did what that person said. It was that guy called Johnny, actually. And I was like, I did what Johnny said and I worked really hard. And I was here. And then just to see it come, like, I think everyone in theatre gets it. It just felt like it, like, slipped through our fingers. Like, yeah, our whole industry just slipped. And, like, we were all just trying to grasp it. And it wasn't coming. And so, like, literally the first lockdown, like, I just, like, I was destroyed. Because I was just, like, I don't get how something we all dreamt of and kind of was always there. Like, when you're little, theatre's just always there, like.
Yeah, and we were so immersed in it and so, like, you know, it just was not everything. Yeah.
And, like, within theatre, you usually pick your end. You say, right, I'm done. And so suddenly just to have it torn away, honestly, my whole, like, even to this day, just, like, a bit of my soul is kind of missing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone. But it was, yeah, it was hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think a lot of people have felt that. Like, I feel like it is such a huge part of me.
Yeah.
That I don't necessarily know who I am without it.
Yes.
And I still don't think I know.
Yeah.
Like, I still don't think I know. And, like, I, you know, people say things like, you know, you are you. And, like, you know, it's not. But it does. It feels like there's a piece missing.
I just don't think it's the same for people in theatre, though, because we spend, from the minute you start your career, you spend so much time because you're slugging and because you're trying to make it. And then when you make it, you spend so much time in theatre because you made it and you love your job and you want to just be in it. So, yeah, so much of you becomes entwined in theatre. Like I was saying to Ollie, like, lockdown meant, sorry, Ollie's my partner. Lockdown meant that, like, you're all my friendship group.
Yeah.
So suddenly, like, my support network was gone because I couldn't see them. And then we only issue where, like, touch and hug and smell is such a part. And then that's deprived. It's just like, whoa, because it's such a part of our lives.
Yeah, like, it's an industry where everybody, you know, you just get used to the fact that actually you go into a room and people hug you.
Yeah.
And, like, some people don't. Like, some people aren't that kind of person. Like, you know, some people work in theatre and they're not that kind of person, but I am.
Yeah.
Like, I love a hug. And if somebody comes at me for a hug, whoever it is, I'll hug them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I mean, there's probably a few people that I wouldn't. Boris Johnson, Donald Trump. But, like,
I'd still probably,
you know, anybody
just
in theatre. Yeah. Kill anybody in theatre comes at me with a hug and I'll be like, yeah, sure, I'm in it. I'm ready.
Exactly. Just so, and just like, just
that's missing.
More like fleeting touches.
Yeah.
That you just get because, you know, you just touch someone's shoulder or you, I don't know. I just feel like we're such a unique industry and so much, and you tie so much of yourself in the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm the same. Like, a part of me is like, God, who am I without theatre? Who am I without those darkened lights?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really know. Yeah, it's
hard. Hard. Okay, and the big question is, what is the best thing about theatre?
I think the best thing about theatre for me is dreams. Like, you can dream so big just from the fact that you are in a tiny pale room with the walls probably chipping and lots of garishly coloured strips of tape on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And you are transported to a whole world, and there are your friends, completely different people. Mm. And you're sat there like, I can't believe that. I can't believe you're doing that.
Yeah. What?
And then, like, dreaming in that sense, but also dreaming in the sense that, like, we were all little girls and boys who thought, oh, one day I might like to do this. And suddenly we're calling shows, you're lighting shows, like, you are changing people's lives. Your dreams are becoming somebody else's dreams. I just think that's phenomenal. Like, I don't know. I know you can get that in lots of different jobs, but I just think theatre is so unique in that the dream is endless.
Yeah.
Whether small or big, it's endless. And I love that.
Mm. There's the headline for the podcast. Dreams are endless.
I think thank Disney you very much stealing that. Trademark that.
All right, we'll workshop it. We'll find it. We'll find another way. So for this part of the podcast, I've asked you to prepare a letter addressed to theatre itself. No pressure, but this is my favourite part of the podcast every time. So yeah, no pressure. If you're ready, I would love to hear your Dear Theatre letter.
I am ready. Again, the disclaimer for the tears and the sniffling. Okay. Dear Theatre, hi, how are you? How have you been coping during this lockdown? I'm sorry I've not checked in before, it's been hard. Though this lockdown and all the others have been long and hard, I really wanted to write this to say thank you. This is probably the longest I've sat still in 5 years, if you can call setting up a business sitting still. But sitting still has given me the time to reflect and specifically on you. You've been there for me for years, from little black boxes to giant auditoriums rivaling the ancients. Go you. And in all those years, I never thought there would come a time when your hushed backstages or bustling stairwells at the Five wouldn't be the soundtrack to my evenings. Your hallowed boards have been my dream since I was little. They have been my candlelight on the darkest of nights, keeping me warm, especially in that freezing digs on that tour. I won't mention the name, but you know. Creaky floorboards, darkened understage passovers, and secret nooks and wings were my serenity and my escape. Backstage relay, a fun game of whose line do I know? And the evening pack-up, a quiet time when you and I could reminisce on that day's show, giggling by a sink over that hysterical warm-up game. You were my constant companion, my greatest confidant, and my most treasured dream. My heart breaks to see you. My heart breaks to see you so quiet, so empty, and so very dark. Your halls are no longer bursting with life. Your doors no longer revolving with every hope and dream. And your stages, the very heart of you, are bare. For this, I am so sorry, and I have no words. However, you are mighty. Through years of hard work and steadfast friendship, you have created an army of loyal, determined, and courageous dreamers. We are here, waiting in our wings for you this time. We light your stunning exteriors red. We line the streets dressed as fabulous dames. We proudly, loudly, and sometimes badly, sing show tunes over the evening dishes. You are always on our mind. You are always on my mind. And we are here, waiting for the day we can spruce you up, light the halls, dress the stages, and show the world your beauty again, because that day is coming. While we wait, please keep your spirits up, and remember, you are so very loved by so many people, and we will continue to fight for your voice to be heard. I love you, old friend. Remember, I am here. And don't do anything dramatic to get attention, like flooding a basement somewhere, you drama queen. All my love, always, Lizzie.
Oh.
Oh.
I'm lost for words. That was so beautiful. That was so beautifully written. So many bits of it that I wanted to remember. The thing you said about it being your serenity and your escape. And what did the loyal, courageous dreamers. Just beautiful and so true. Thank you.
That's okay. Oh, sorry for the crying.
Sorry I made you cry.
Oh, it's just like you telling everyone to write these letters is just so hard, because I think for so many of us, you try and disassociate yourself from it because it almost seems too big of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So to actually sit down and personify theatre and talk to, I guess for me, like talk to something, someone, a place that has shaped my life.
Yeah.
It seems so, I don't know, it's so raw.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. I had this idea very early on when I started thinking about the podcast, about the letter. I really wanted to do the letter. And I didn't know whether it'd work. I wasn't sure. I didn't really know like what it was, but I sort of knew that it was something. Anyway, when I started doing them with people, I was like, oh my God, like just blown away by the emotion. But I couldn't write my own. I couldn't do it. I didn't do it for ages. And then like I literally got to a point where I was in bed and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't sleep. And I was like, just got to write it. And it's so weird. Like it just kind of, because I didn't do it for so long. And then I was like, I've got to do it. Can't sleep. Got to get it out. And I haven't changed it. I literally just wrote it out and that was it. And actually I've written quite a few since. Like really? I sort of, it's kind of almost like a bit of a, particularly recently, I think like it's sort of almost like my notebook's kind of peppered with these Dear Theatre letters now. Cause it's like a little like, hey pal, you know.
It is so cathartic.
You know how I'm feeling. you know where I'm coming from. Like it's just because people try and understand, but they don't understand.
Yeah.
Because it is like a grief.
It's the hardest thing because I know loads of industries have suffered.
Mm. Yeah.
But I guess I don't know. I just feel like ours is so unique. It is like grief. You are feeling like it's lost.
Yeah, because, you know, I had the awful realisation the other day that I have not called a show or worked in theatre for over a year.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And, like, the weird thing for me, I guess, is that, like, originally that was my choice. I was like, I need to have a break. I need to do something else. I need to try and, like, find another thing. And then very quickly realised that was not the right thing to do. But then it was too late. It sort of went. And then so I didn't actually really get to say goodbye either. It was kind of, I kind of did. I sort of said goodbye, but then it was like I wasn't on a show, so I didn't feel part of anything when it all
But then you stopped. Didn't say goodbye. You said, like, see you in a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is almost worse because then you're like,
oh, I made this choice. And now it's gone.
It's
just,
it's so
not
weird.
Gone. It's away. It's
That's
not gone.
Thing, it's just so weird how, like, everyone's experience is so different because, like, yours, when you just thought, I'm just going to take a quick pause, because that's totally within your right, and then suddenly your see you in a few doesn't have an end date.
Yeah.
And then you've got people who ended a show and were going to start a new show, and they never, they said goodbye, but they didn't say goodbye, and they haven't said hello.
Yeah, people that didn't even get to open their show.
You know? And then like ours, we were on a break. So it's like, well, I didn't say goodbye because I was meant to start you in a week again. Yeah. There's just so many endings that are just so disrupted.
Yeah.
And it just feels, that's why I think your Dear Theatre letters are so beautiful and such an incredible thing that you have given us. Because honest to God, I would not have penned this letter if you hadn't said, Lizzie, come on this, because I've listened to the podcast and I've heard other people's and I've just thought, I'm not writing one.
Mm.
Like, it's just, no, I'm not doing
too
it.
Too much. Mm.
And then you, like, in a weird way, have forced me to do it, but in the best way, because...
Sorry.
No, but in the best way, because, like, I didn't think I even had that, which is an awful thing to say, but I didn't think I had that much emotion left.
Yeah.
turns out I do.
Yeah, it's passion, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's the passion of it. It's the kind of, that fire is in you. It's just kind of, it's easier not to let it out, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
For me, I found that it's easier not to talk about it, not to let it out.
Yeah.
Not to engage with it, because otherwise I'll just break, I think.
Literally, I couldn't. That's why, like, when I set up this business and people have asked me, like, are you going back to theatre? And I'm just like, oh, I'm not talking about that right now.
Yeah, can't engage. Like, sorry.
No. Because, like, the floodgates will open and all that anger, upset, confusion. It's just, it's too, like a jumbled potent mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you and sorry and thank you. It was so lovely to hear that. I know it was hard, but it was, I think it's necessary to hear. I think it's necessary for people to hear that this is still going on and still hard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So I'd like to now move on to the final section, which is in fact a new section. I love that you joined in there.
All
love
the
that.
Things on.
So I've decided in a very twee way that it's going to be called the Inspiration Station.
I love that.
I'd love a jingle. Maybe I should think of a jingle. And I wanted to call it that because I'd love to just hear about things that inspire my lovely guests. Because I feel like inspiration and creativity are so kind of linked. Mm. So I would love to know, Lizzie Rodipair, who inspires you?
I'm going to go for, okay, obviously my mum inspires me. Love you, mum. But I'm going to go for someone different. I am going to go for the lovely, incredible, talented and strong Vanessa Sutherland, who is an exceptional stage manager. And she is someone who inspires me, and she's someone who's inspired me for years, because she is steadfast. And she, like, for anybody who's been a part of National Youth Theatre, anyone who's worked with her, she has got her arms open forever. Like, once she knows you, her arms are open to you any time of day. And just to find that in a person is so rare. And she, like, she's done so much in her life. She's done so much. She's achieved so much. And she's constantly doing. And I just think, like, she's phenomenal. She's like, truly, truly, she's someone who truly inspires me. And it's phenomenal because I love her.
What a great answer.
Honestly, like, I could literally talk about her forever.
Yeah.
Just the way... the way she works, the thing that inspires me the most about Vanessa is she does not require or expect any form of gratitude or thanks. She is just selfless. She gives, and she gives 100% to everything, and she never requires you to say that she's given 100%. And I think that's quite a rare trait in a person.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, she's just faultless, because, like, personally for me, I love her, thank you. I'm very much like, you know, tell me I've done a good job. But to find, you know, it's quite a human trait. But to find a woman like her, she doesn't expect thank you. She just does it, and she gives 100% because that's what she should do. And that's who she is. And I just think that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh, what a lovely answer. Okay, next one. What inspires you?
I think what inspires me, I don't know.
That's okay.
Oh, I think actually what inspires me is, this is going to be a bit weird, but is to pay people back for the trust they've put in me. Like, there have been so many people in my life who have given me so much, whether it's, you know, a little bit of advice here or... you know, a job or friendship, you know, somebody has entrusted me with friendship or just something silly, like, not silly, it's the most beautiful thing, but I'm a godmother. So just you entrusting your child to me, and I just want to know that in my life I am doing everything I can to show every single person who's given me their friendship, their love, their trust, like, thanks. Like, I will be the best that I can be to just show you, like, thank you for giving me all these things. I think that's what That's what inspires me. That's what keeps me going.
Do you know what, Lizzie? You make my heart burst like wide open. I swear to God, everybody who listens to this podcast is going to just fall in love with you. Because you're honestly, like, your answers are just so heartfelt and like honest and true and just lovely. You're just, honestly, you make my heart break. Oh, sorry. Just having a little moment. You're brilliant. Let's leave it there. Where would you say you feel the most creatively inspired?
Oh, see, that weirdly has changed recently. So before, mm-hmm. I would have said I feel the most inspired, weirdly enough, in like some weird little nook in a wing somewhere that I found, and I'm like, this is mine.
Yeah.
But recently, since I set up my bakery, I feel really inspired in the kitchen.
Mm.
And I'm like, who knows? I could bring that to some weird backstage kitchen when I'm, you know, making something weird.
Yeah.
Like you usually are. But yeah, yeah. I feel really inspired in the kitchen. I feel really creative. I feel really free, which is nice. It's nice to find that again.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm a bit jealous. Okay. What have you discovered this week that you have felt inspired by? This can be as small as you like, as big as you like, just something that's inspired you this week.
I have just actually, so recently we've been going on a lot more walks, mm-hmm. and I have just discovered like a real love of being outside and the freedom that can give you and the fun that you can make it. Mm-hmm. Which is, that's something that's really inspired me this week, just to go out and just see people and nature. And just, I don't know, it's quite a nice form of like people watching when you go to a park and you just see everyone being themselves. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. It's my new thing. I love that too. Yeah.
A little bit like a creeper, but hey ho.
That's all right. Everyone else is doing it too. It's fine.
Exactly.
Okay, so we are now speeding towards the end.
No.
Of our podcast. I know, I'm sorry. But before we say farewell, is there anything else that you would like to say, get off your chest, shout from the rooftops? Over to you.
I think what I would like to say is to everybody listening to this podcast who, you know, probably works in theatre, go you guys, you're the best. But I just want to say, like, we're all here and we are all in it together. And even though we've come from a place where we actually were in it together, and now we're like really separate, I don't think any of us should ever forget that we are all in it together. And we're all still a ginormous theatre family. We've all got each other's backs. And like, whether this pandemic means that you don't go back to theatre because you've started something amazing, shout out to Not on the West End. But whether you've started something incredible and you just think this is where you are now, whether you are going to go back to theatre, whether you're going to continue having a break, I just think we all need to pat ourselves on the back because we have gotten through this. And I think as an industry, we've gotten through it stylishly, beautifully and resiliently. So go us. Bring out your pom-poms, guys. Go us.
So brilliant. You're so brilliant. And I will say that as you have mentioned, you have started up a marvellous baking business while you haven't been able to work in theatre. Lizzie's Homemade Bakes, is that?
You know it.
Yep, Lizzie's Homemade Bakes. Where can people find more information about that so that they can make lots of orders and keep you very busy?
Please do, guys. But you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Lizzie's Homemade Bakes with my new love of photography. Any food photographers out there, please give me a shout. And you can find me on my website at www.lizzieshomemadebakes.com, where I just make lots of delicious baked goods.
And they look incredible, like incredible. Mm-hmm. And they taste even better. Do you have a gluten-free range? No, but with all this free time I've got, guys, I have been practicing my gluten-free range. So brilliant. I can't wait for your that. Eyes open. Vegan though, my vegan range is delicious. And keep your eyes peeled for the vegan range, the gluten-free range coming soon. Yeah, very excited for that. Can't wait to make an order. Lizzie, thank you so, so much. It has been, I mean, my cheeks are hurting so much that it's been such a pleasure. I just have not stopped smiling through this entire episode. So thank you. It's been a joy to see you and to speak to you.
Thank you, Amy. It's been delicious seeing you and just thank you for this podcast. Like, I don't know if people tell you enough, but you have created something beautiful and incredible. And I've had far too many breakdowns over the dishes listening to the podcast and listening to everyone on it. So thank
you. I'm not sure that's a good thing, is it?
It is such a good thing. It's just like a cathartic. Usually the breakdowns are like hysterical listening to people's like nonsense stories because we all know it. Yeah. We've all forgotten that prop.
Yeah.
Don't write it in a show report. We're over guys. It. Jesus. Yes. No, I love it. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you. That's very sweet. Love you lots.
Love you too.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of That's Theatre Darling. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you fancy giving the equivalent of a round of applause, you can do this by taking a moment to leave a review, subscribe, and why not just tell all of your friends about it. See you next time.